Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. A government-chartered plane that evacuated more than 200 U.S. citizens from Wuhan, China, the center of the coronavirus outbreak, has landed at a military base in Riverside County. None of the passengers show symptoms of the deadly virus, but they're undergoing retesting at the base and are being asked to stay there. Caroline Champlin of KPCC has more.
The plane was initially headed to Ontario Airport, but was rerouted to the March Air Reserve base near Moreno Valley. Dr. Chris Braddon with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says passengers could be there for 72 hours, or up to the full incubation period of the virus, 2 weeks. That's not an official federal quarantine. The patients aren't being detained.
We try and balance how to respect their rights, how to be as least restrictive as possible, and still be very careful.
Still, Dr. Nancy Knight from the CDC says they're discouraged from leaving.
They are sitting in the middle of a military base. Any discussion around departure would be just that, would be a discussion.
The CDC says passengers so far have been happy to stay and be tested before flying back to their homes. Health officials say the risk of coronavirus spreading in the U.S. is very low. For the California Report, I'm Caroline Champlin in Moreno Valley.
And in Sacramento, for the third time, a controversial and closely watched bill to boost new housing in California failed in the state legislature yesterday. Senate Bill 50 would have required cities to allow 4- and 5-story apartment buildings near major transit hubs. KQED housing reporter Aaron Baldessari has more.
The vote came down to the wire, but it was just 3 votes shy of passing. Supporters of SB 50 say new housing is desperately needed to address the state's rising rents and homelessness. But it faced opposition from many sides, including housing affordability advocates. They fear low-income renters will be pushed out by an influx of new luxury housing that the bill would stimulate. Los Angeles State Senator Holly Mitchell summarized their concerns like this.
For me, the core issue as we debate the housing crisis, because we are in one, can be summed up in one sentence. Who has the privilege of living where?
SB 50 has one more chance. Senators could vote on it again before Friday. For the California Report, I'm Aaron Baldessari.
Governor Gavin Newsom says Pacific Gas and Electric, the state's largest utility, quote, no longer exists. Newsom made that statement yesterday at a forum in Sacramento. The governor also again threatened to take over the bankrupt utility, which is responsible for some of California's most destructive fires, unless it makes fundamental changes to how it operates.
Its culture has to change. Its mindset has to change. Its framework away from short-termism and situational thinking has to be replaced with a culture that focuses on you and me, not just shareholders.
In response to the governor's statements, PG&E told the San Francisco Chronicle it was striving to become, quote, the utility of the future. Meanwhile, inside a bankruptcy courtroom in San Francisco yesterday, PG&E assured a judge that it's on track to emerge from bankruptcy by June 30th. That's a state-mandated deadline. At the same time, the judge overseeing the bankruptcy approved a giant settlement with victims of one of our state's worst wildfires. My California Report co-host Lily Jamal was at the hearing. Good morning, Lily.
Hi, Saul. The settlement the judge approved yesterday is with 18 victims of the Tubbs Fire, one of the many fires that tore through Northern California's wine country in 2017. While several blazes that were part of that firestorm were found to be caused by PG&E, the Tubbs Fire wasn't one of them, at least not according to CAL FIRE investigators. That did not stop Tubbs Fire victims from pushing to take their case against PG&E to court. The trial was supposed to start last month, but under the deal approved yesterday, there is not going to be a trial, and the amount that those 18 victims get will stay under wraps. That's the part that's really upsetting to lawyers who represent victims of other fires. They say keeping the terms of the Tubbs Fire deal confidential is a problem because it might mean less for Paradise residents impacted by the Camp Fire, which was the state's deadliest and most destructive. So what you see here is, as we get deeper into this bankruptcy process, a splintering among groups that once had a common foe in PG&E. That's happening as the details of who gets what gets brokered by PG&E and decided by this judge.
A lot of information. Okay, thanks, Lily. We say California's primary election day is on March 3rd, but voting actually starts weeks beforehand. Many Californians will begin voting in the coming days when they send back completed mail-in ballots. And in Los Angeles County, for the first time, voters will be able to go to a polling place over an 11-day period starting on February 22nd. So, how prepared is California for all this voting? I talked about these issues with the state's top election official, California Secretary of State Alex Padilla.
Monday, February 3rd is the day counties begin to send out their vote-by-mail ballots. Some counties are already doing it. And think about this, 15 million vote-by-mail ballots are being delivered to voters in California in the next couple of weeks. That's more than the population of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada combined. Are we prepared for the election? I am confident that California's counties are prepared for the election. You know, over the last several years, I've personally visited all 58 counties myself. So it truly is a team effort to ensure the most fundamental exercise in our democracy.
One big issue that's emerged is what no-party preference voters, sometimes called independent voters, can or cannot do during an election, during a primary. Could you briefly just clear that up?
So here's where you have to pay a little bit of attention. By registering no-party preference, you've told the state you don't want to be affiliated with a political party. So your default ballot will not have any candidates for president because it's a nonpartisan ballot. But that doesn't mean you can't vote for a candidate for president. Here's where the homework comes in. There's a few political parties that allow for what we call crossover voting. The Democratic Party, the Libertarian Party, and the American Independent Party. Yes, American Independent is a political party. To vote for a candidate of one of those parties, a no-party preference voter simply has to request that particular ballot. The other parties, Republican, Peace and Freedom, Green, are closed primaries. So if you're a no-party preference voter and want to vote for a candidate for president of one of those parties, you have to re-register to vote with that party first. You can do that today. You can do that online at registertovote.ca.gov.
And just to sum up, if you are a no-party preference voter, again, sometimes known as an independent, you have to take extra steps to vote. And no-party preference voters who are listening to this should be aware of that.
Exactly. The other recommendation we have is for no-party preference voters who vote by mail. Should probably pay attention to this even earlier because you want to make sure you get the right ballot sent to you by your county. So don't delay. Don't put it off. Don't procrastinate. Reach out to your county today.
All right, Alex Padilla, Secretary of State of the great state of California. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Don't forget to vote.
Another topic Padilla brought up was his concerns about voter misinformation on social media. Well, yesterday, San Francisco-based Twitter announced it was rolling out a feature that will allow users to report suspected voter misinformation, like telling people they can vote online or giving intentionally false election information. California's giant sequoias, some of the largest organisms on Earth, are dying at an alarming rate, and in the very parks that were founded to preserve them. Scientists from Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks say they've lost 28 trees in the last 5 years. KQED's Peter Arcuni has more.
Known for their thick redwood trunks and gnarled upper limbs, giant sequoias have a reputation for indestructibility. They can live thousands of years resisting drought, fire, and infestation. But Nate Stevenson, a research ecologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, says more than 24 trees succumbed to an attack by native cedar bark beetles.
That contradicts a century of dogma that these sequoias are immune to all bark beetles.
He says extreme drought and recent fire, combined with the beetle infestation, was likely too much for the giants to handle.
If you had removed any one of those, the trees likely would have survived.
Christy Brigham is an ecologist and forest manager with Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks. She says the loss of 28 sequoias isn't, by itself, catastrophic.
But it is an indication that we need to be worried about the future, and we need to continue to invest in understanding and trying to help these systems be as climate change adapted as they can be.
USGS and the Park Service are working together to identify vulnerable trees and to study how conditions are affecting giant sequoias in the parks. For the California Report, I'm Peter Arcuni.
And that is the California Report for Thursday, January 30th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Bridge Bank, a division of Western Alliance Bank, offering flexible financial solutions to entrepreneurs and to the technology and life science communities. Bridge Bank, be bold, venture wisely. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing, through science, the interdependence of all living systems.